indisputable leader of the gang. He's the boss, he's the myth.
The Grease Man with Rock and Roll, the best of the new and old on WWDC FM Washington, DC 101.
As a matter of fact, I got a picture I carry around in my wallet. Somebody I used to know gave it to me so I wouldn't be lonely on a long trip. Here, take a look at this. It was taken with an ultra-close micro lens. He said, "Sacre bleu! I have never seen it." I said, "Take a good look at it, huh? Take a good look at it. That's a delicacy. Your old geezer lips have never tasted of it." He said, "No. You eat some. It looks so round." I said, "No, believe me. Believe me, they ain't rare. Believe me. You can find them if you look and if you know where to look. You see, Mr. Cousteau, you think you're so hot. You ain't discovered everything. Look at this. Take a good look." He said, "Look at it. It appears to be... it appears to be formed in some sort of secretion." I said, no. He said, "What's this over here?" I said, "Oh, that. Don't worry, it goes away in about 10 days. I'm sure this was healed by now." He said, "How could I live my life? How could I have sailed the seas? How could I have roamed the world? I never encountered Zippy. My life is a failure." And he wept on my shoulder, and I felt that frail old man. He said, "You must give me a clue to its location." I said, "Mr. Cousteau, I'm sure with all the barnacles and mold and stuff, if you give me a second, I bet you can find one on board this ship." "You know, geezer, why don't you go lie down in your cabin?" So sure enough, I prowled around. I went into the galley. There's this big old beefy woman cooking up some slop. I said, "Ma'am, could you come here? I need you to do a favor for Mr. Cousteau." She said, "Oh, I've worked on the boat all the time. I haven't ever even..." I said, "I know, it's a big boat. Come here. Here's what I need you to do. He's sleeping in the galley. I want you to go inside here." So sure enough, I walked into his cabin. I said, "Mr. Cousteau." He said, "Oui." I said, "I'm going to turn out the lights because the vision might be too much." And I said to that beefy woman, "I'll hold your apron for you." So, with the lights dim, she went in there, and before you know it, he was face to face, eyeball to eyeball. I slammed the door, leaned against it, lit a camel, and in a couple of minutes' time, I heard, I said, "Mr. Cousteau, it's an acquired taste."
He's the one everyone in Washington is talking about, the Grease Man, on DC 101.
Booters always complaining, the people fishing off, the lines hanging over and all that, it gets a little confusing, but I snuck out there. I figured, hell, 6:45 in the morning, who's going to be around? Jack, yeah. I had a big 5-ounce sinker. I threw it over the side of the bridge, and I just waited for that fish to bite. I started to doze off when I noticed a tremendous tugging on my line, so I start reeling in frantically. I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, the line is, like, bent, you know? And I'm like, reeling that thing in. Imagine my shock and horror when I swing it over the bridge railing and I see there's an ear hanging off there. I'm like, I look over the side and there's a boat going around in circles. Some guy yelling down there. He was way far. He yelling, cursing up at me, shaking his fist. I yell back down to him. I said, "Hey, just be thankful you weren't nude sunbathing, huh?" And, of course, I hastened away from there. I left him scrambling up the side of the bank as I roared away in a flurry of gravel and smoking rubber. And I am now ready to begin there with Stevie Winwood on DC 101. A little bit of rednecking. Thrust in, A little bit of the funky chicken. Gotta be careful I don't pinch my hair. Let me tell you a fact about this old boy. Gobble the ghee is my pride and joy. After I've had a couple of beers, I get the urge to breathe through my ears. I peel back the satin, I peel back the lace, and then hungrily I bury my face. You know, baby, I'm redneck. Can't help it, I'm a redneck. Oh, baby, I'm a redneck. Can't help it, I'm a redneck. Oh, baby, I'm a redneck. Can't help it, I'm a redneck. Now my honey thinks I'm really dashing as I'm chomping away with my Brill Cream flashing there. My tongue is darting from side to side. I ain't afraid, open wide. My neck is jerking and my back is hunching there. I'm a man possessed when it comes to munching there. Like that, baby. Ooh. Aye, aye, see you ever ready to compete with this. I knew you'd like it. I knew you'd like it. I got a spread eagle on the floor. I got a chair propped up against the door. Ew, that sweet scent sets me reeling. Listen to that thing, the way she's squealing. What's this? A little string underneath? A little something with which to floss my teeth. Oh, baby, I'm redneck. Can't help it, I'm redneck. Oh, baby, I'm redneck. When the time comes that I'm finally done, I go outside and sit in the sun. I just lay back in my garden, waiting for my face to harden. Like Cleopatra on the River Nile, everybody waits for me to crack a smile. Oh, baby, I'm redneck. Can't have it, I'm a redneck. Oh, baby, I'm redneck.
Don't touch that dial. There's more of the best of Grease coming up on a Saturday morning.
Ooh, that is nice.
On DC 101.
Prince Charles married Lady Di Dice. Prince Andrew married Fergie there. He's bold helicopter pilot, daredevil, war hero. But Prince Philip was too gentle a man to even finish his Royal Marines training. Can you imagine that? And of course, the palace is furious about it. I wonder what it must have been like there the first day of basic training for poor Prince Philip.
Lieutenant Broadhurst. From this point on, I shall be your be-all and end-all. Give your hearts to God because your asses belong to me. Form up straight, you there, Philip. You're holding your rifle upside down.
I don't care.
Well, I bloody well care. It is my intention to turn you into a Royal Marine and damn your eyes, I shall. Now we're going to have a live fire exercise. Whereby a machine gun is fired directly over your head. You will crawl on the ground or you will be shot. Now when the machine gun begins, you will crawl from point A to point B. Is that quite clear? All right, begin firing. All right, men, crawl. You there, Philip. Cease firing, cease firing. What's the matter with you? What is it? Damn your eyes!
Oh, the noise, man. I don't like the noise at all.
You don't like the noise, is it? Well, bugger the noise! You're supposed to put it out of your mind! We're crawling across an empty gun basement! You don't think about the noise! You think we're about getting there!
Oh, sir. The problem with crawling, sir, is that I've got my uniform totally dirty. Look at this. I've grass stains on my knees. I've got my jumpers completely soiled. Look at me. I'm a mess. You wouldn't have a compact on you, would you? I'd love to check to see if I'm running.
Now we don't carry comp. Royal Marines don't carry mirrors, damn you, except for signaling planes, not for looking at their eyelashes. Now crawl, resume firing. What is it now?
Sir, I don't think I can complete today's exercise because I've got a tinkle. And I...
Let me tell you something, Philip. Royal Marines do not tinkle. Do you hear me? You never stand up and say, I've got a tinkle. What kind of bloody Marine do you think you are? Royal Marines, just go right in your pants.
Oh, sir, I don't believe I can void in my trousers.
Bloody well void. If you're in a battle, you can't say, cease firing, I've got to go tinkle. You tinkle where you are. What, are you crazy? I don't care if you are the prince here. Go where you go.
Now we're going to try a mortar exercise so you know what it's like to actually hear the wheels of mortar fire over your head. It is a dummy round without shrapnel, but there will be an explosion. All right, launch the mortar. All right, everyone on the ground.
Why are you still standing there, Philip?
Well, sir, there was a puddle there, and I thought if I threw myself on the ground, I'd be soaked in wet and catch my death of cold. You idiot! You imbecile! You can catch your death of shrapnel, of gunfire! You don't worry about a cold in battle! I'm going to strip you of your rank. I'm going to send you back and shaved. Fleet Street will have a party with his ear. Prince Philip, too much of a wimp! Too much of a bloody wimp to finish the Royal Marines! You're through, do you hear me? Through!
I don't care.
Well, all right then, get out! You're excused. You can go to the mess hall right now. And do me one favor, would you, Philip? We had a bit of a scandal the last time you were in the mess hall, and the men are still talking about it. Remember this. Should they decide to serve fruit at this afternoon's mess, it is considered gauche to eat bananas whole. Remember that, please.
It's Saturday morning with the best of Grease on DC 101.
In the Hobbit the Gaga handbook here. Help me get this thing off the shelf. Oh, God, this book is heavy. What you do is you put all that stuff in there, you know, about long talks and moonlight walks. But then you put, you've always wanted to join the Mile High Club. You've wanted to go skydiving in the evening when the sun is setting to kiss and enjoy a sweet embrace. And then to leap from the plane hand in hand and kiss as you drop at 120 feet per second. Hitting your ripcord simultaneously. Shoots billowing, gazing at each other's eyes. A lot of women find jumping out of a plane, you know, exciting and fascinating. Plus the thought of smooching at sunset before you leap together. How romantic. So they'll call you. Not a wench wants to jump with you. So sure enough, it'll be a fun day. You go out to one of those skydiving places. And, you know, before they let you jump, they make you practice jumping off a platform. So, you know, you'll get to wait for her as she jumps off and you teach each other how to fall and you help her up and brush her off. And you jump off the platform and roll and she brushes you off. As the afternoon goes by, the excitement, the thrill, and the semi-danger of leaping out of an aircraft only brings you closer together. Two human beings sharing the same surge of adrenaline. You'll be able to put your arm around her. And before you even get in the plane, that's when you get your first kiss. You say, how about, well, kiss for luck. You kiss her hungrily, wantonly, your lips crushing. And then as the plane takes off, you slip the pilot a 10 spot so he'll circle for a while. And you say, well, there it is, just like I promised in my computer dating. Sunset. I also promised a big kiss at sunset. Hungrily, she comes into your arms, almost wanting to prolong the moment before she'll have to face the cold, chilling winds as she stands in the door of that beach craft. She kisses you and returns your passion. Say, wait a minute, let's get these shoots off a second. Here you go, put this thing under your thuggish. Yeah, that's the ashy angle we're looking for. Oh, Della! Yeah, before you know it. Yeah, there you are. Ooh. The sensation of your ecstasy only heightened by the vibration of those twin Rolls-Royce engines as they throb your way through the sky. All right, now, what do they tell us on the ground? Let me get your chute just right here. Let me cinch this up tight here, right? Here's your reserve. Right. If you don't feel that thump by 3-1000, you fall ass. All right. Here, let me get my chute, but let me make sure you're properly positioned in the door. And you put your foot in her back and... All right, as you turn to the pilot, take her back. Come on, I got a plane to catch. But...
There's more of the best of Grease coming up on DC 101.
All right, I admit it. Let it be known. The Grease Man is into cheap thrills at Jerry's Subs. I go by there for a cheap thrill every day. Time to wonder what it must be like to strap out a gun and pin out a bird. Become a lawman. Well, you're sitting there on the side of the road with your radar gun working, belching Bavarian creams. You had a half a dozen for breakfast. And you bow your head and say, thank you, God, I owe you one. Hits your britches up over your pendulous belly. Put on your mirrored sunglasses so when she stares at you, the only thing she can see is the fear in her own eyes. And slowly walk up to her, thumping your citation book in your hand. She says, oh, my God, it's you. You say, yes, yes, come on. Let's see some driver's license and registration now. I got you, you stupid little sleaze. I got you good now. 20 mile an hour over the speed limit. One of your headlights is out. She said, my headlights are out. You say, yeah, come around. Look at this over here. Glasses busted and everything. I'm going to have to write you for that. That's a dangerous thing. Look at his taillight out over here. My God, look at this crack you got in your back window. I'm going to have to write you a ton of pay and paper, lady. As you slowly walk back to your squatting car, she's seething with rage. Yes, you remember the bitterness of the divorce. She hated everything you stood for, truth and justice. She ran away with some Abby Hoffman kind of maggot, some scrawny left-wing pinko scumbag. And so you sit there with froth coming out of your mouth as you write citation. Busted taillight, busted rear window, unsafe operation, 20 miles. I mean, you just write them tickets of a storm. When she suddenly screams from the window of her car, all right, yes, you were right. I was hanging out with subversives because I hate Cossacks like you! And she reaches into her glove compartment, gets a grenade, and throws it! It lands on the hood of your car, thunk, 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 and comes to rest on the windshield wiper. But you're a man, you just sit there staring at it. You get out, you grab the grenade, you pull the pin out, you throw it back at the stupid hog. And as the car goes up in flames, you stand there and say, cooker!
It's the Best of Grease Man show on a Saturday morning at DC 101.
Hello, mingling, volleyball, dancing cheek to cheek. I'm not a man who's ashamed of his body.
Remember when I was in college, I made extra money by posing for art classes. First, I was nervous, but the first time, you get used to it. You know, the art class needs to paint a picture of it. They had naked women, naked men. Paid you $25 to go there for 45 minutes and stand there in front of the room. They'd say, turn to the left, turn to the right. $25, what the hell? I remember I was standing there one time. Hand on your hip. I said, okay, bend your right leg, right? I'm standing there. They're painting away furiously when all of a sudden, oops. Hey, imagine. Instructor said, what the hell's going on? I said, I'm sorry, I'm standing in front of the air conditioning duct here. If you're nice. All the students were a little flustered. He said, you know, it's not done often in portraits of men. It wasn't done on the Pieta. It wasn't done on Rodin's The Thinker. But yeah, there have been some artists that have painted in the 10-hut position. So if you all would like to go ahead and take care of the picture this way. And so they ripped up their pieces of paper and they started painting again. All of a sudden, that air conditioner turned off, and sorry, everybody. And the instructor said, well, what's it going to be? I said, I don't know. I'm sorry. He said, all right. Everybody start painting in the at-ease position. The air conditioner kicked back on again. Everybody said, what the hell's going on in here? I said, I'm sorry, all right? Gee. So they're painting away after they ripped up the last one. Oh. I said, oh, look, I'm sorry. I just can't get this up. I just had a nice co-ed walk by the room. And the teacher said, will you make up your mind? Will you make... I said, hang on a second, would you? And I crawled underneath the guy's desk for about 4 minutes. And yeah, I saw the smoke rising from my camel underneath the desk for a while. And then... And they came walking back to the modeling position. I said, all right, go ahead and start painting. He's going to stay where he is for a while.
On with a fiesta!
The Best of Grease Man show rocks on DC 101.
You may have noticed.
I'll give you a hint where I was. Surrounded in plush luggage.
Surrounded in opulent conditions. The chandelier swung ever so gently over my head as I heard the sound of...
Blada 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 blada
blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada blada. That way, if I get bored in some harbor somewhere, I can just sit there popping the bulbs with my pellet gun. Ah, me! The all-new Good Grease is so wide, so sleek, so powerful. Those diesels turbo-injected. But I don't even look at the chart. I mean, that thing is indestructible. I mean, we were screaming across the bay, and my honey's going, look at the chart here says numerous fish traps along this route. All of a sudden, I heard, blah, 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 blah. I just tore right through them. She said, honey, that must have been what all those sticks were sticking out of the water. Fish dry. I said, don't worry, baby. We look behind us. We just chopped that net to pieces. Fish were floating belly up. Little guys in flat-bottom boats were screaming at us, waving their fists. She said, honey, what all them white things? I said, they're crab pots. Don't worry about them. She said, but should we be going? I said, oh, sure enough, you're blah, 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 blah. There I am going along 30 miles an hour, trailing about 15 crab pots behind me. Ah, man, they're just skimming across the water. You know, like a cat of nine tails. Blah, 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 blah. There's nothing like it. After a while, the props just eat their way through the line and cut them free. Leaving the lobsters forever entombed in their watery graves. Yeah. But my favorite thing to do on the all-new Good Ship Grease is I find me a marina where people are launching their boats. And I anchor that big, massive thing. So as people pull up in their cars, pulling a trailer, God forbid, they say, geez, look at that thing out there. There I am sitting there with my blue blazer, ascot, captain's hat tilted at a jaunty angle. I was sitting there having a Viking gimlet. This poor guy pulls up, beat up old Biscayne with a boat on the roof of his car. I mean, how bush. I said, honey, look at this. There, but for the grace of God, go I. And he and his wife, they're wrestling to get that boat off the roof of his car, skinning his knuckles. He's cursing at her. Hold it up, I said. I can't hold it up. It's heavy. Hold it up, damn it. Don't curse at me. I ain't going. They're yelling and screaming. Finally, they get the boat off the roof of their car and scratches the whole side of it. Bangs onto the ground. They wrestle it down to the water. Then he opens his trunk and he pulls out this pathetic little 3.5 horsepower Evinrude. Still, it's a heavy son of a gun. And he wrestles that down and gets in the boat, nearly capsized that thing, trying to fasten the engine off the end of it. All the while, I'm staring, chuckling, swirling my glass. As I bury my toes in my plush after-deck carpet, feeling the breeze on my face, camel glowing gently. Well, that guy, after about 45 minutes of sweating, cursing, and bloody knuckles, finally got his boat going. We had to carry the tanks over to the gas dock and fill them up and then schlep them back. Wouldn't start. Squeeze the ball. Squeeze it. Finally got it started. I'm chuckling, staring the whole time. Finally, he comes buzzing over in his little stinking boat. And he gets right next to mine, and I look over the side. I look down at him as he stands there so pathetically next to my monstrous cruiser. He looks at me and says, "Buddy! How dare you flaunt your opulence in front of me? Sitting there in your massive cruiser, watching me wrestle with my boat, fight with my wife, skin my knuckles, while you sit there smugly in your captain's chair, in your teakwood decks. How dare you?" I said, "You want to know something else that'll get you doubly mad?" He said, "What?" I said, "Right now, even as we speak, I'm getting me some real nice gobble the gear." Ah,
yeah. Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety.
Yes, I'm going to wax philosophic as to why I was a failure in the dental field. I've been thinking a lot about it. Georgetown, you know, they closed their dental school. After all those years, they closed their dental school. All those fresh-faced kids showed up to be dentists, and it was like, sorry to have to tell you this, but, here's your deposit back, So stand by. I have full details coming up in a second. 25 minutes before 10. I thought I would be a successful dentist. I studied hard. I trained hard. I learned what I could, and I'd walk into the office every day, throw my arms skyward, and scream, "These hands have been touched by goblins!" But being a dentist takes a special kind of medical skill. You need not only the ability to study and learn and to actually graduate from medical school with all the tremendous knowledge that takes, but you also need tremendous hand-eye coordination as well. See, it's one thing to be a general practitioner and dispense prescriptions and creams, and it's quite another to open someone's mouth and yank things out of it. And while my patients called me
Dr. Greasemanelli. Because of my ineptitude, I became known to my colleagues as the Butcher of Bayonne. And it just seemed like I had rotten luck anyway. I remember one day I went into my office, and I'd been robbed. Everything was gone. Every sponge, every forceps, every pair of tweezers, every scalpel, everything was gone. And there sitting in my office was my best patient, the man whose mouth had made the down payment on my Maserati. And I wasn't about to let him go and find another doctor that would do it a lot less painlessly and a lot less inexpensively. He said, well, where are the tools? I said, just sit here one second, here. He said, well, I got this bad abscess. I said, I see it, here. Let me give you something for it. Let me Novocaine that up. And while the Novocaine's working, so I ran out to the garage and I started looking around. I said, let me see what we got out here. And I'm moving stuff around. I said, I got it. I said, hey, see, yeah. I said, this will be perfect. I went running back in. I said, good news, I'll be able to handle your abscess. I haven't even touched you. Just relax a second here. All right, now open wide. No, you have to open a lot wider than that. I mean, when I say open wide, I want you to open like you're waiting for John Holmes or something, right? Crying out loud. Now, how am I supposed to do this? You gonna be a big sissy about it?
Gee.
Open as wide as you can. Now, really, that's it. You stretch your jaws open wide, right? Like you're trying to suck on a flagpole or something. That way. All right. Let's see if we can get this here. Here we go. Hold still. By Jove, I've got it. As I turned away, and the chainsaw slipped out of my hand and fell in his lap. I know there's a car flick somewhere.
Come on.
Oh, that's nasty. It's the Greaseman. DC 101. Here we're going to do the Jim Baker rap now. Come on. Get down. Well, he stands in church with his wife by his side, praising the Lord with sanctimonious pride. A family man with grace and charm, two sweet children on his arm. When nobody's looking, he's a different man. He's knocking the bottom whenever he can. She was 20 years old and she looked so nice, and he couldn't help but cut his slice. Hey, everybody, looky. Old Jim Baker's getting him some nookie. Let's rap. Do the Jim Baker rap. Whoa! Get down with your bad self, y'all. Say, tear the roof off the sock. Tear the roof off the sock. And say, what? Say, who? Do the bus stop here? More team on back. Holy no, let's rap. The Jim Baker rap. Well, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Did you ever see him and Tammy Faye cry? Send us money, we're just poor folk. We gave our savings, we're going broke. Begging and pleading in pathetic voices. And yet they're both driving matching Rolls Royces. They got a house in Tahoe, a house at the beach. A big old houseboat, always in reach. They got antiques all over the place. And Tammy's wearing 5 pounds of makeup on her face. Let's rap! It's the Jim and Tammy rap! Guys, they make me want to vomit. Lord, strike them down with a speeding comet. Taking money from the truly needy and spending it all nice and greedy. I want you to reserve a special corner in hell to let them burn and fudge pack them as well. Let's rap. I do the Jamaica rap. Get down with your bad self. Y'all say, say what? Say who? Do the bus stop here. Multi-multi. Holy no, nacho cheese, diesel fit. I said nacho cheese, diesel fit. I said nacho.
If you've been looking,
Chapter 304. It's called Redskin Hobble. That's right. The town loves the Redskins. Women love the red skin. You love the red skin. All you need to do is
go to one of those places that print up sports jerseys and have a Redskins jersey printed up.
Yeah, it's that simple.
Have it printed up, put some number on there, like number 16, you know, they're not using. Get your old shoulder pads out. Put them on, pull that jersey on, you know, put a football uniform on, cleats and everything. And then throw a big coat on over it. And you sit there in the game, watching the game with your helmet in your lap, looking around. So you see that sweet thing walk by. You can tell by the way she's screaming and yelling, she adores the Redskins. You can tell by the way she's jumping up and down, oh, bodacious, doctors. That's the one, look at her, look at her, you can tell by that look in her eye. Anything with Redskins out of this is like theater. That's when you throw off the coat that you had hiding a uniform, put your helmet on, go clanking up to her in your cleats and go, hey! She'll look at you in your Redskins uniform. You say, let me see your ticket stub. What's your number? She'll go, well, 10975B. You go, that's it. You're the winner. You get a day with the Skins. Hi, good to meet you. She'll say, well, which Redskin are you? You say, I'm Charlie Monk. She'll say, number 60, I don't recall. Why aren't you playing? You say, well, I get to come up here and lead you down to the, you're coming down to the locker room. You're going to be in the locker room. You're going to be in the clubhouse. You get to spend a day with the Skins. Come on with me. Congratulations from the Skins. Put those hot dogs out. Come on. And you grab her by the hand, and she'll follow along, thinking, my God, a day with the Skins, a day in the locker room. I'm going to go to the clubhouse. I'm going to meet all the Skins. And so you lead her down to the hallway. And as you get in the hallway and you pass one of those supply rooms they got at RFK, you know those rooms is like crates of hot dog rolls stored in there? When you pass one of those, you say, oh, geez, I nearly forgot one of the biggest prizes. First of all, you get a Redskins kiss. Come on, let's step in here so we don't attract any attention.
You step into the supply room and
yeah, put your hand in the small of her back. Let her feel the heat of your body. Yeah, make sure those shoulder pads clanky, huh? Yeah. And if she returns your kiss with equal fervor, say, don't forget that red skin's bump and run, and you give her a big squeeze. Yeah. Hey, you see, well, we don't normally do this, but you'd like to talk to the judge. Oh, that's nice. In her enthusiasm, the joy, the excitement carried away. You watch hungrily.
How do you get rid of her after this
tawdry liaison? Keep in mind, this will happen within 4 minutes of meeting her. You should be, 10 cc's lighter. Easy to get rid of it. As you come walking out of the supply room, you say, geez, let me hit the bathroom 1 second. I'll be right out. Run into the bathroom, lose the shoulder pads and jersey, and go out walking casually by her in your Groucho Marx nose and glasses.
You laugh so much, your sides will ache, your heart will go pit-a-pat.
Sing hallelujah, hallelujah.
Stand by, there's more in store from the one and only Grease Man on WWDC FM Washington, DC 101.
Ah, man, if somebody gets on your case, on your back, and just ticks you off, what do you say? You say, your mama! Your mama is good enough for me. Your mama is looking good to me. Estelle and I were hobbling there, just as pretty as you please. When I foolishly asked her to give my doodads a squeeze. Oh boy, she really grabbed them, causing me to shout. I asked you to squeeze them, not wring them out. Your mama, ooch, eat. Your mama is good enough for me. Your mama is looking good to me. I remember my days in high school, make no ifs, ands, or buts. All that studying made me want to heave my guts. But we had this teacher who really gave us the biz. Here's what I said when he announced that we'd be having a pop quiz. Your mama is good enough for me. Your mama is looking good to me. Well, these are really troubled times. I don't know what to do. Of my shrieking, some people are taking a dim view. Well, I am a big, bold man. I gotta be what I gotta be. So if you have a problem, here's what I say to thee. Your mama, your mama, your mama was good enough for me.
Oba, oba.
Your mama, your mama, your mama was good enough for me.
The Grease Man on DC 101.
Oh, my goodness. I finally got through.
What can I do for you?
I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, God. What is it? What is it?
What is it? Yesterday, on the radio, you had the gall to say that if some little baby doesn't grow up to be a lawman, he might grow up to be a librarian.
Is that what you do?
That's what I am. I'm a librarian. I got a bone to pick with you. You can't do that.
You're a librarian, a man.
Librarian.
Well, answer me this. Answer me this. Answer me this. How long you been packing fudge, huh?
How long have I been packing fudge?
Yeah.
Well, now, let's...
I mean, that ain't no job for a man, buddy. Come on.
Yeah, peanut butter or chocolate?
I don't care. Either one, buddy.
Well, I don't do that, actually.
Are you are a librarian?
Yes, I am. Proud to be. Bold librarian.
Well, you know, there are some bold... I shouldn't say that. I don't want to make a sweeping generality. Because I knew one librarian that was unbelievable. They called him Samurai Librarian. I mean, if you brought a book in that was overdue, he'd jump up on the desk and scream right in your face. And if you came to him and said, I seem to have got the file cards out of order. I was going through the Library of Congress card system, and he'd just look at you right in the eye and say, and lay you open there. And God forbid you started to talk in the library, you have a conversation with somebody, he'd jump in your face and yell. Needless to say, you would shut up immediately. He was... took no guff. He'd walk up and down those shelves, waiting for somebody to crack the spine of a book, and he'd lay you open with one sweep of his sword, waiting for someone to speak out of turn, waiting for someone to leave a book out too long. He'd come to your house and rip it out of your head. He was Samurai Librarian, but he is no more. One day, the guy that was the librarian for all the city libraries in charge of them all came in and said, my God, look at this place. Look at this place. It's a mess. I found three books upside down in the shelves. I found one book with pages missing. And the checkout record hasn't been updated in 2 weeks. Samurai librarian slowly walked over to the copy machine and stood on it. He took out a sword and he buried it deep in his guts! And the chief librarian said, really, Yoko, a simple letter of resignation would have been sufficient.
Look at this mess, man. Look at this on DC 101.
I had a very tough crowd, you know, and I was looking out over the audience and, grim faces, people staring incomprehendingly, missing punchlines, murmuring, ordering drinks while I'm telling stories. I finally said, hey, I just dropped trout. I said, ladies and gentlemen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, sweep. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, sweep. And 1, 2, 3, 4. This is what I think of your attention. This is what I think of this restaurant. This is what I think of you people here. Would you like to join me? Feel free. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, everybody backhand now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, jiggle, do that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, sweep. All right, let's do around the world. Reach behind your knee, up and through. Hey, Grandma, that's it. But you people with bad backs, don't try this. And 1, 2, 3, 4. Left hand around the world under the knee. And 1, 2, 3, 4. Now you got it. Now you're working. That's the way. Get up and down and watch them sway. Who to the left and who to the right? Who's the one that feels good today? That's it. Away, and away, and away. All right. In the palm of your left hand, knuckles to the right. This is what it usually asks you. Scotch, 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 scotch. Clear out the first three tables. Sweet.
Oh, some party. Did you see the guy?
Good morning, 101.
Grease Man.
Yes.
Morning, Commander.
What can I do for you?
Give me some advice here.
All right.
I got myself a girl I've been hobbling for a while.
Hmm.
But she's a screamer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that means that...
I'm having problems with it. Resident manager knocking on the door, asking if everything's okay in there.
You have your own place?
Yeah, I do.
But she still is a screamer.
Yeah, buddy.
And in the midst of it all, they will knock on the door or call the police and stuff.
Things like that, yeah.
Mm.
Well, also into back scratching. I feel like I should wear my leather or something to, you know, jacket or something to bed.
Mm.
Give me some advice. How do I handle it?
Is this the only person you're dating?
Yeah, it is.
Well, just tell her, first of all, that you love her very much and you don't want to see anybody else. And consequently, it's not necessary to mark the territory, you know, so you don't have to put welts in your back just in case you should be with anyone else, you know, that usual game. And the other is, what you should do is, can you give her a mouthful of pillow? A mouthful of pillow. When you see her open her mouth to start, you shove some pillow in there and say, bite down, you know? Bite down on that. Or a stick. Get a nice birch twitch, yeah. From out in the backyard, you know, clench it between her jaws.
Huh? 2x4 or something, huh?
Yeah, then you clench on a piece of 2x4. There you go, huh? Sound nice?
Yeah, that sounds nice. How about this? She called me another name last night.
Of another man.
Of another man.
Ooh, in the midst of Hubble?
In the midst.
Mmm.
And it kind of, you know, kind of left us both kind of quiet this morning.
How, are you living together?
Yeah, we are.
How old is this thing?
22, buddy.
How old are you?
25.
Mmm. Well, that'll happen. That's just an accidental mistake. Probably she probably really wasn't thinking of him.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say. That's Freudism, isn't it?
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
No, it's just stupidity sometimes. You know, your mind's 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Although I never have called my funny little honey Estelle.
Well, how would you feel? Whoops. How would you feel if she called you, George or something?
Yeah.
George.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
It's never happened.
Yeah.
Man, you gotta be bold, but it don't mean nothing.
Yeah, I know. It just kind of left us funny this morning, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, all right, if you have to, if the pillow doesn't work, you know, give her a tracheotomy. That'll shut him up quick, all right?
What?
All right, see you later. Just tracher. Tracher. Yeah, if she wants to talk, she'll have to get one of those buzzers, you know? And it's hard to, you know, disturb the neighbors with one of those, you know, those buzzers you hold to the throne. Hello, how are you? Yeah, one of those kind of things? Well, good. Get one of those buzzers. Then she'll be able to go, oh, God, that is nice. That is nice. That is very nice. Yeah, keep going. A lot quieter than screams. So, Traker, and get her a buzzer. It's 25 minutes before. Are you really a medical man? Did you spend all those years at Blauman General interning? Yes. Cardiovascular surgery, that was my game. Every day I'd walk into the OR, throw my arms skyward, and scream, these hands have been touched by God! I remember one day, I had a doctor as a patient, and you know, doctors do make the worst patients. We had a one Dr. Blasnalis at the hospital, and he was a cardiologist as well. And he was always advising people, you know, first of all, the first thing you got to do, you're getting palpitations. First of all, knock off that smoking. That pack and a half is doing you no good. Second of all, get into some kind of exercise. Even if you're not into aerobics or anything brutal, get into just a good arm swinging walk. And when you play golf, you know, carry your own clubs. I mean, get some exercise, get the sludge pumped out of your veins, knock off the salt. Of course, Dr. Blasnalis did everything you're not supposed to do. I mean, I'd shake my head when I'd hear him with a patient in his office because Dr. Blasnalis, you know, smoked a pack and a half a day. Never got exercise, worked 20 hours a day, juggled 80 million patients, never got any sleep. Sure enough, one day he comes walking out of his office. He stops dead in his tracks. He goes, he said, Dr. Blasnalis, what is it? He said, ventricular fibrillation. Boom, he drops to his knees. Bang, he passes out. I said, crash cart, second floor, stat. And sure enough, we defibrillated him. He came to. He said, I said, put this man to sleep. Immediate surgery. He said, no, local anesthetic. I don't trust you, Grease Manelli. I never have. I said, well, put him out. I'll call the anesthesiologist. We whipped him into OR9. We did as he said. We gave him a spinal, some local. I opened him up. We held a mirror so he could see what was going on. I said, my God, look at the damage to the heart muscle. Transplant is our only answer. He said, no, you're not going to do the transplant. I said, I got to do the transplant. There's nobody else on staff. And we have a donor heart. It's your only chance, Blasnalis. He said, do it, John. For once in your life, do it right. So I opened him up. He's looking at the mirror, watching my every move. I finally got the old heart out. I got him on the life support system. I said, all right, hand me the donor heart. The nurse gave it to me. I said, all right, bless us. We'll have you up and around doing deep dive. Whoops! We all stood there as we looked at the donor heart, smashed on the floor, pierced with shards of glass. Dr. Blau's knowledge looked at me. The only thing we could hear in the room was the sounds of the life support system. He said, you idiot, you're total imbecile. Look what you've done. Look what you've done. You got me on life support. You smashed the donor heart. I'm through. I sat there trying to figure out what to do, and suddenly, a gift from heaven. From outside, we heard... Hallelujah. I'll be right back. I took the stairs two at a time. I bounded out of the street. The police were already there. I said, come and throw. I'm a doctor. I felt the carotid. I said, no pulse here. This guy's slammed. It'll be you. Massive head trauma. He's gone. Let me check his donor card. Donor card. I whipped at my scalpel. I plunged it deep in his chest. I grabbed that bad boy out. I cut the heart free. Zip, 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 zip. And I took that baby back up the stairs. Hey, good news, Blas. Now that's good news. I found the heart. Well, as I was running into the OR, a nurse was coming out with a whole tray of instruments. And look out there! The heart got squished between the door and me and thump, fell onto a bunch of used petri dishes. Dr. Blasnala saw that spectacle. He kind of weakly lifted his head and he said, Grease Manelli, I just have one thing to say to you. I said, what is it, Dr. Blasnala? He said,